Self-handicapping, Session 4, Major Empirical Findings, from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia, at en.wikipedia.org. Experiments on self-handicapping have depicted the reason why people self-handicap and the effects that it has on those people. Self-handicapping has been observed in both laboratory and real-world settings, studying the psychological and physical effects of self-handicapping has allowed researchers to witness the dramatic effects that it has on attitude and performance. Jones and Bedlons gave people positive feedback following a problem-solving test, regardless of actual performance. Half the participants had been given fairly easy problems, while the others were given difficult problems. Participants were then given the choice between a performance-enhancing drug or a drug that would inhibit it. Those participants who received the difficult problems were more likely to choose the impairing drug, and participants who faced easy problems were more likely to choose enhancing drugs. It is argued that the participants present with hard problems, believing that their success had been due to chance, choosing the impairing drugs because they were looking for an external attribution, what may be called an excuse for expected poor performance in the future, as opposed to an internal attribution. More recent research finds that, generally, people are willing to use handicaps to protect their self-esteem, for example, discounting failings, but are more reluctant to employ them for self-enhancement, for example, to further credit their success. Radwar and his colleagues in 1991 selected participants who scored high or low on the self-handicapping scale, SHS, and who had high or low self-esteem. They present participants with a handicap and then with success or failure feedback and asked participants to make attribution for their performance. The results show that both self-protection and self-enhancement occurred, but only as a function of levels of self-esteem and the level of the tendency to self-handicap. Participants who were high self-handicappers, regardless of their level of self-esteem, used the handicap as a means of self-protection, but only those participants with high self-esteem used the self-handicap to self-enhance. In a further study, Radwar presented the handicap to only half of the participants and gave success and failure feedback. The results provided evidence for self-protection, but not for self-enhancement. Participants in the failure feedback handicap absent group attribute their failures to their own lack of ability and reported low self-esteem to the handicap present failure feedback condition. Furthermore, the handicap present failure group reported levels of self-esteem equal to that of the successful group. This evidence highlights the importance of self-handicaps in self-protection, although it offers no support for the handicap acting to self-enhance. Another experiment by Martin Seligman and colleagues examined whether there was a correlation between explanatory styles and the performance of swimmers. After being given false bedtimes on their preliminary events, the swimmers who justified their poor performance to themselves in a pessimistic way did worse on subsequent performances. In contrast, the subsequent performances of those streamers who had more optimistic attributions concerning their poor streaming times were not affected. Those who had positive attribution were more likely to succeed after given false times because they were self-handicapping. They attributed their failure to an external force rather than blaming themselves. Therefore, their self-esteem remained intact, which led to their success in subsequent events. This experiment demonstrates the positive effects that self-handicapping can have on an individual because when they attributed the failure to an external factors, they did not internalize the failure and let it psychologically affect them. Previous research has looked at the consequences of self-handicapping and have suggested that self-handicapping leads to a more positive mood, at least in the short term, or at least guards against a drop in positive mood after failure. Thus, self-handicapping may serve as a means of regulating one's emotions in the course of protecting one's self-esteem. However, based on past evidence that positive mood motivates self-protective attributions for success and failures and increases the avoidance of negative feedback, recent research has focused on mood as an antecedent to self-handicapping, expecting positive mood to increase self-handicapping behavior. Results have shown that people who are in positive mood are more likely to engage in self-handicapping, even at the cost of jeopardizing future performance. Research suggests that among those who self-handicap, self-imposed obstacles may relieve the pressure of a performance and allow one to become more engaged in a task. While this may enhance performance in some situations for some individuals, in general, research indicates that self-handicapping is negatively associated with performance, self-regulated learning, persistence, and intrinsic motivation. Additional long-term causes of self-handicapping include worse health and well-being, more frequently negative moods, and higher use of various substances. Zuckerman and Choi assessed self-handicapping, well-being, and coping among college students on two occasions over several months. Self-handicapping assessed on the first occasion predicted coping with problems by denial, blaming others, and criticizing oneself, as well as depression and somatic complaints. Depression and somatic complaints also predicted subsequent self-handicapping. Thus, the use of self-handicapping may lead to not only uncertainty as to one's ability, but also ill-being, which in turn may lead to further reliance of self-handicapping.